Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and a very warm welcome to the investor meet of Manali Petrochemicals Limited. Let us begin by introducing the MPL leadership team who will be engaging in today's session. Mr. Ashwin Muthaiya, Chairman, MPL and Founder Chairman of AMIH Group Singapore. Mr. Hugo Shardoff, Head of Strategy, AMIH. R. Chandrasekhar, Managing Director, MPL. Mr. Gurumurthy Nagarajan, Managing Director, Notedome, UK. And Mr. Tobias Dash, Chief Executive Officer, Penwhite Solutions, UK. At this moment, all participants are in the listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. At that time, you may click on the Q&A tab to ask a live question. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Manali Petrochemicals Limited is a leading petrochemical manufacturer with over 3 decades of expertise based in Chennai, India. MPL specializes in the production and marketing of propylene glycol and polyols. It is a part of Singapore-headquartered $2+ billion AM International Group. I would now like to invite Mr. Ashwin Muthaiya, Chairman, MPL and Founder Chairman of AMIH Group, Singapore, to please give the opening remarks and welcome the audience. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, I take pleasure in welcoming you all on behalf of Manali Petrochemicals to this investors call. We are very happy to share the latest updates on our strategy and the progress across our business. After the presentation, my leadership team and myself look forward to addressing your questions. It's been a while since we connected last, and we hope today's session will provide insights into our journey, particularly in a more strategic context. At MPL, our vision is deeply aligned with our ESG commitments. We remain steadfast in our focus on introducing low-carbon products and making our businesses relevant to the future. We have a dual focus on maintaining our position in the commodity chemical space while expanding our share in the specialty chemicals market with a long-term and sustainable approach. I look forward to an engaging and fruitful discussion today, and also your active participation is invaluable. With that, I would like to hand over the session to Mr. Hugo Shardoff. After the presentation, we'll be ready to take your questions. Over to Mr. Shardoff.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you to everyone for joining us today. To start the presentation, I will hand over to Mr. Chandrasekhar to start covering the first slide of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Hugo. Briefly, we cover a basic introduction about MPL, the chemical solutions, performance chemicals, consolidated position of the company, the macroeconomic outlook of the company. We start with the overall introduction for MPL. Some basic information. We are A+ stable credit rating from CARE for our long-term borrowings and A1+ for short-term borrowings. Our long-term debt is very low and we have a strong liquidity of around 400 crores by end of June 24. Internal accruals are predominantly used for expansions, basically with an IRR of 20% on PG expansion, 23% on polyester polyol, 30% for the proposed West Greenfield expansion. Our cash conversion cycle is 59 days in Q1 of 24-25. We move on to the next slide. A brief look at the business verticals we have. On the upstream side, we have propylene oxide, polyols, propylene glycol, PGMME. And on the downstream side, specialty polyols. And on the performance chemicals, surfactants on foam control agents, release agents, etc. We move on to the next slide. On the chemical solutions, specifically on MPL standalone, some of the numbers and performance we can look at. We are an ISO certified 3 decades old manufacturing company, having 2 manufacturing facilities in Chennai, predominantly producing propylene oxide, propylene glycol, PGMME, polyols, and other derivatives. We have a revenue CAGR of 5.86 over the last 8-year period. MPL constantly works on expanding our product portfolio with good performance backed up by fiscal prudence and high potential for value unlocking. And we have over 360 employees by end of June, have clocked a total turnover of 177 crores on standalone basis for Q1 of 24-25 with an EBITDA of 10.6 crores. We move on to the next slide. We show in graphic form the movement of some of the ratios. The first one is ratio of inventory to sales on the commodity products what we have. And the second one is on the net realizable value, what we call as NRVs. Due to COVID, we had very high demand for our commodity products, coupled with low exports and low imports as well on the similar products. That drove our inventory levels quite a bit down. However, a slow return back to normal is expected now on a regular basis. The NRVs, we had a very skewed NRV during the COVID period because we don't have imports during that period and the demand was very high, but that has leveled back to pre-COVID levels subsequently, and we expect the trend to continue for the future. We move on to the next slide. We look at specifically some of the new projects which we have recently announced and have started executing. The first one is the propylene glycol plant with an initial phase one capacity of 32,000 metric ton per annum. The model investment is for 94 crores with a 50-50 debt equity ratio, has an IRR of 20.7%. The predominant market segment we will be covering with the expanded capacity of PG will be food and beverage and pharmaceutical sectors. We move on to the next one, which is polyester polyol. 2 such plants are planned, and one is already completed with a 4,150 metric ton per annum capacity. And the second one, it's an ongoing project. We'll be focusing at construction and appliances and elastomers, specifically with polyester polyol, coupled with the captive consumption requirement. A little bit on the West India greenfield expansion. The board has recently approved an expansion into West India to cater to the requirements of the local market. Initially, we will target 30,000 tons per annum of polyols with an investment model of 130 plus crores. An IRR of 30% is projected with a 5-year payback. Predominantly, Manali from Chennai will be supplying the requirements for this polyol capacity, coupled with a bit of imports. We move on to the next slide. Some of the smaller but notable projects what we have undertaken in the recent past, we are sourcing renewable energy through hybrid power system, catering to 68% of our overall requirement. We are strengthening our R&D team, we are strengthening our marketing team, and we move on from fossil fuel to RLNG for our plant 2 operations that will completely eliminate usage of furnace oil in our operations. We have sourced additional storage capacity for PO plus polyols as well, and we are working on quite a bit of optimizing the overheads in our plant operations. We move on to the next slide. This will be on the Note Dome and our other subsidiary in the UK. I would hand over to Mr. Gurumurthy for Note Dome operations.
Thank you. Thank you, Chandru. Hello, everyone. This is Guru from Note Dome UK. As you know, Note Dome Limited is a pioneer in producing polyurethane solutions for cast elastomer industry. As you can see in the slide, the applications are quite diverse. We do supply to oil and gas. Pipeline pigging is an example. Mining and quarrying, and then automotive and defense industry where they produce bushes and mining screens. agriculture, like potato pickers, harvesters, and subsea. There's another growing industry where under the sea cable protection systems, Castrol MSR finds application. And paper and steel manufacturing, like the rollers and brittle rollers, tension rollers, applicator rollers, are an example. And construction, this finds the architectural molds. As you can see, I mean, we do cater to diverse industry, and we have quite a long goodwill because our products finds application in niche segments, and we command a good goodwill across our products at more than 40 different industries. We do export to Middle East, Far East, South America, North America, and majorly our markets is UK and wider Europe. So we cater to diverse countries and diverse industries and command strong goodwill. And because of this, we do have a natural hedge against all these countries, slowdown, and various other market-related risk. And we do have a good team of people with can-do attitude and people who have been with Nodum for more excess of 30 years. We do have a strong, lean, and agile operations and customer-centric attitude, which by which we make tailor-made solutions to our customers. Could you move to next slide, please? Yeah. The key goal of Nodum has been achieving enhanced value for the parent group and the wider shareholders. How we achieve this, mainly we studied the entire value chain and then segregated our customers who sees our products as value-added, where we are single-sourced or where we command better premium due to the bespokeness of the product or the stickiness that our products command at the customer end. So we do tune our pricing at a rate higher than the market. And on top of that, this resulted in enhanced margins. And on top of that, we do leverage the global supply chain. We do opened up our supply chain, and then we started sourcing both from Europe as well as from the Asia. So all these things resulted in enhanced gross margin. On top of that, we do efficiently manage our costs through strict OPEX control. And also, we do have greener operations. Like we are in the process of installing solar panels, which will not only reduce the carbon footprint, but also reduce our cost. So we do have good management of pricing as well as our cost, by which we are able to deliver enhanced value at the EBITDA level. Could we move to the next slide, please? And this slide captures, what lies ahead of us. As you can see, the global cast elastomer market is in excess of 1.4 billion, and this is growing at a steady rate of 5 to 6%. And mainly the growth is coming from APAC region. So what Nodum device, it's a growth strategy, is we do have a strong focus on innovation. We do develop new products to suit our growing customers, and also we do have a plan to develop our diversify into new markets like renewables, under the sea cablings, and all those things where traditionally Nodum didn't have much presence. We are cautiously putting more efforts into this region by employing new people and also by developing new technologies to tap into this high growth industry. And also, we are expanding to a new region. We do recent contact with a distributor in Spain, and also we recently participated in a trade show in Middle East in an effort to grow our presence in Middle East region. And also, we have in the advanced negotiation with a distributor who will represent it in Sweden, the Nordic territory, basically the Sweden, Finland, and Denmark. So on top of this, aligning with parent company's ESG goals, we are also developing sustainable products based on we are offering sustainable polyurethane solutions to our customers by leveraging the sustainable polyol and sustainable crosslinkers. This we have recently supplied to a customer in Finland as well as a customer in UK. On top of it, we are enhancing our brand awareness and the presence in the market, not only by participating in trade shows, but also rebranding. We recently rebranded our logo and relaunched our website. All these things, is in an effort to enhance our reach and presence in the market. So this is the overview about NodeDome. I'd request Tobias to take over, to cover Penwipe, please. Sorry, Tobias, you're on mute, I guess.
Yes, that's right. I need to unmute. Thanks very much for that, Gurumurthy. My name is Tobias Tashan, I'm the CEO of Penwipe. Penwipe is a manufacturer of specialty surfactants, in particular for foam control, but also we manufacture a number of specialty products for quite specialist applications. We've been doing this for 40 years, originally as a successful family business that has exported, has a long history of exporting to many countries. But 2 years ago, we were acquired by Manali, and with the strong support from our mother company, we are...
Sorry, Tobias, I think we need to move the slides.
Sorry, yes. So since the takeover by Manali, we really have had an opportunity to invest for growth, and with support of the mother company also develop our growth plans, which is key because this has always been a very profitable business, but we think we can continue on that profitability journey and globalize that that profitability. So a number of things have already happened in that space, and more will follow. If you then look at our typical key areas of where we're active in the market, we are very strong indeed in things like wastewater and recycling, where we have a very strong position in the UK and in Europe, but we hope to globalize that because these are areas where also globally there is strong interest, in particular because of these application areas, strong links to sanitation and the circular economy. And in particular, in the UK and Europe, we have a very strong footprint in supplying, for instance, the food grade and the beverage industries, where we supply very many of the A brands in their segments with typical problems that they have with foam control, either in their processes or in their products. And last but certainly not least, we also have quite a substantial position in fermentation. This is really either in controlling aerobic and anaerobic digestion in some applications, but also, for instance, is an area where we support the pharmaceutical industry in optimizing pharmaceutical fermentation, for instance. And finally, we have a basket with some very niche specialty products, which typically tend to be quite specialist but very high margin areas. Typical very specialist offerings here are products for parts of the print industry, for parts of the construction industry, and high quality products for domestic plumbing, for instance, or for fiber optic cables. Next slide, please. Here you get a bit of a sense of our current sales breakdown and our profitability journey that we've been on. We already have a strong history of profit growth, but we clearly think we can augment that. And certainly under new ownership, we've been able to bring much more structure and discipline to the sales and marketing function. So we've been able to expand our pricing and margin management and key account management. And likewise, we've also have been able to invest in the plants to reduce complexity and cost with, you know, quite favorable results to show for it, so to speak. If you look at where we approach the market, typically we focus on the premium end of the market where customers really value our customer intimacy, as we call it, our technical service, and a large portfolio of tailored products. And consequently, our profitability is high. Products really are valued on our ability to help customers with avoiding cost or improving efficiency in a plant or resolve issues with excessive foaming, for instance. And that means that the price is really determined by the value offering, not by the cost of the underlying material. And this, of course, is a typical aspect of the specialty chemical segment that we're involved in. And that also means that our customers tend to be sticky, so to speak. Once we have them, they don't tend to leave us, and we have very many long-standing customer relationships who we can hold on to. And for those customers, the total purchase price of our category of products, the foam control chemistries, is relatively a small part of their total procurement spend. So these customers also tend to be less price sensitive to the price of our products. If we then go to the next slide. If you then look at, you know, where are we going from here, then, you know, it is very clear that we're on a good path already, but we will continue to focus on that. We will maintain our core focus on foam control, but we will continue to put selective focus on specialty areas where we can maintain niche value, I should say. Historically, we've been a very strong operator in the UK, and we're not done yet. We have a very strong opportunity still to grow in this local market. But clearly, the next phase of our journey requires that we do a lot more in Europe, where we have a material footprint already, but we can do much more based on our existing strengths and value proposition. And in particular, we think we can do more in terms of direct sales of own brand products. For the rest of the world, really, that's where the symbiotic relationship with Manali will help us a lot. We already have profitable export business there, but we hope to expand that. India is going to be an important market for us, and you will have seen the announcement that we recently made about establishing an Indian subsidiary, where we already have the first employees doing business development in that market. We are actively assessing the opportunities to create a manufacturing hub based in India, not just producing for the Indian market, but potentially also for the wider Asian region. If we then look at some of these key ESG aspects that are important to the group, they are very important to us as well, and we feel that Penwhite already has intrinsic advantages that can benefit us, and that allow us to capture quite easily an increase in societal interest in these things. So the way we manufacture our products is intrinsically low carbon. Many of our competitors use higher carbon ways of manufacture, so we think we have an advantage there. Because we have a long-standing focus on areas like food and pharma, very many of our product formulation chemistries are already based on water-based or vegetable oil-based formulation platforms, which intrinsically have a number of advantages in terms of environmental compatibility, no harm to people, low toxicity, and biodegradability. And these are strengths already for us in the market. I think the value of that will only increase going forward. We do work, of course, with a number of suppliers also to take carbon out of our feedstocks. But it is very clear that our ability to help our customers become more sustainable and do more, for instance, in the circular economy is a key element of our offering. If you then look at the number of accreditations we have in the ESG space and outside it, this for us is a key element of our differentiation. We really want to manufacture to the highest standards in industry, and we will continue to look for opportunities to increase that competitive gap with the competition. To support that, of course, we will continue to support plant investments to take cost and complexity out, and we still see opportunities to optimize there. We will continue to recruit, attract, and retain high-value staff and continue to build a good mix of marketing, channel management, and strategic relationships. And with that, I'd like to give the floor back to the moderator.
Thank you, Tobias. We just move on to the consolidated position for Manali Petrochemicals. We have a very strong consolidated financial structure. And if we look at the liquidity ratios, we have 4.3 presently on the current ratio and 3.6 on the quick ratio. We clocked a top line of 1,061 crores consolidated for the previous financial year 23-24. And considering the current and liquid assets, your company is very strong and having an absolutely good position on the liquidity situation. The consolidated revenue shows a healthy trend in spite of tough global markets. So we continue to expect a good, stable platform for the years to come. We move on to the next slide. Yeah. If we look at the sales alone, excluding other income, we clocked the top line sales of 1,028 crores for the last financial year compared to 1,166 crores for the previous financial year. We move on to the next slide. A bit of analysis on the core products, what we have, and a breakdown of product-wise analysis. Predominantly, 63% of our product portfolio is from commodities and 37% from specialties. If we look at the product-wise portfolio, propylene glycol stands top at 27% of the overall portfolio, followed by slab stock at 19%. The others of 31% includes our thermoware, general rigids, cold cure molds, no-dome and penwhite products as well. And just to reiterate, we are the sole manufacturer of propylene oxide in India, a market leader in propylene glycol, polyols and PGMME, and the only integrated polyol manufacturer in India. We move on to the next slide. We do have certain lessons learned from the last financial year. The slowdown in China has significantly increased imports into India, putting a lot of pressure on our NRVs, especially slab stock. The increased raw material cost coupled with supply chain disruptions, increased transportation costs, the month or so impact of Cyclone Michaung in December 2023, all these have put a tremendous stress on our margins. However, we look forward to a more stable platform in the future. Despite imposition of anti-dumping duties, its impact on the export volumes limitation, we continue to rely on our own performance than on the government intervention on the ADD side of it. We move on to the next slide. The value building for our shareholders, both on market capitalization and the net worth, we stand approximately at 1,000 crores now. It's a very good performance compared to the previous years. Of course, leave alone the COVID period of 2 years. And we continue to maintain a 10-year unbroken record on dividend declaration. And in spite of tough situation for the financial year 23-24, we had declared a 15% dividend to the shareholders. And the good financial health supportive is definitely from our own, whatever efficiencies, improvements we bring in our own activities, in our performance, in our operations, and supporting the value of the shareholders by continually giving dividends is our focus, and we will try to maintain that in the years to come. We move on to the next slide. For the future sustainable eco-efficiency, some of the steps we have taken. First one is we have signed an MOU with Econic Technologies, and in the following slide, I would request our chairman to give a brief on our association with Econic Technologies. This is basically the waste CO2 will be utilized as a material for our CO2-based polyols, thereby reducing the impact of propylene oxide input into our polyols. This is one big way forward on our eco-friendly, eco-efficiency operation. We have already switched on to a 68% RE power for our energy utilization. We have signed two agreements with Thermax and Amplus, and we continue to get the supplies and use the 68% of our energy resources through RE power. And on the biopolyurethane, bio-based raw materials have been introduced, and we are working closely with two customers on bio-based MDI polymer for node dome. This will definitely improve some of the eco-friendly activities undertaken by your company. Now, MPL also is moving on to RLNG platform, as I briefed a few minutes before, for our plant 2 operations, and completely we will come out of usage of furnace oil in our operations in Chennai. We move on to the next slide. I would request Chairman to say a few words on Econic Association, please.
Thank you, Chandru. I'm pleased to say that Manali Petrochemicals has entered into a very strategic partnership with the Econic in the UK. So they are working on a technology that is useful for our polyol manufacturing. And of course, it helps us in reducing the carbon footprint. So we have an arrangement where Econic technology is available to us and also to the Indian market. I hope very soon we will be able to incorporate this into our full-scale commercial production and thereby reducing our dependence gradually on the on fossil fuels. So this is a little short brief from my side on Econic.
Thank you, Chairman. A couple of more points before I hand over to Hugo. The effluent reduction, we work on an ETP technology. There is a study going on with CSIR NIRI to implement a ZLD process. Though it may not be achievable in full, we are trying to get the study fully up and running and implement to the maximum possible to reduce the liquid discharge from our system. And on the second portion, without waiting for the study to be completed and implemented, we have already installed skids to reduce the aldehyde concentration in our product, which will reduce the batch time of our production cycle, will increase the quality of the polyol, and doesn't require downstream separation process. So we are embarking on certain stable future feasibility implementation projects. Certainly that will help in eco-friendly future for Manali Petrol. The vision of Manali continues to continuously enhance our customer-centric approach towards product customization and to upgrade safety and environmental standards for the betterment of the community at large. With this, I hand over to Mr. Hugo for the macroeconomic outlook of Manali.
Thank you, Chandru. Good afternoon, everyone. So I will be covering very briefly the macro outlook, considering three things: local market, megatrends, and the petrochemical industry. And as you can see on the first slide, the real question, and I think I'm not the only one that is trying to figure it out, is have we reached the bottom of the cycle yet? If you looked at India and the petrochemical industry for the past 4 to 5 years, we have seen two very different cycles since COVID. The first cycle actually started in 2020 when we saw a strong shift in consumer spending from services to good purchases. And at that time, that was also coupled with supply chain disruptions and strong local demand. That's why you have seen a very big uptick into your company's results. The second cycle, which is actually still going on today, started in 2022. And that's when we started to see a strong slowdown led by the supply chain reopening, inflation growing, which is slowly coming down now, and a very strong local demand. So this cycle, from our perspective, will still go on for at least a year and a half. We are definitely looking at the recovery from China, and we do not expect that recovery to come anytime soon. So for us, we feel that we have reached the bottom of the cycle, but we don't feel that we are yet in a place where we are going to see a very strong growth and much less import from countries like China and the Middle East. If you look on the right-hand side, we have added the Brent crude oil price. It has been declining, and we still think that it will continue to soften. As most of you know, the Brent crude oil prices are correlated, positively correlated with the propane prices. As you know, propane is a byproduct of crude oil refining, and Manali is a major purchaser of propane. So for us, obviously, if prices go up, our prices go up. If prices come down, our prices go down. As you know, we are local manufacturers. We are not exposed that much to forex fluctuation between dollar and rupees. If we go to the next slide. These two graphs are quite interesting because if you actually look at your company on a standalone basis, without looking at the market, you would think that your company has done not so well in the past 2 years. But if you actually look at the petrochemical industry, considering most of the upstream chemicals that exist, propylene, ethylene, benzene, most of them, at a global scale, rates for most of the plants have come down significantly from 2020. And if you, what I've mentioned in the first slide about the second portion of the two cycles that we have seen, you can see that during COVID, the global operation rate started to come down significantly, and they have reached a bottom in 2022. And still today, with the increase of supply coming from China, we still feel that the operation rate will stay very low. So if you actually compare global operation rate versus Manali's capacity utilization for the commodity product, we are very much in line with the market. From 2020 to 2022, global operation rate went down from 82% to about 65%. If you look at your company from 2021-22 to 2022-24, for plant 1, we went from 82% to 72%. From plant 2, we went from 55% to 45%. So we are very much in line with the global market. On top of it, we are facing, as you know, heavy imports from China, which obviously have put in a lot of supply, which is not being catered to the local market due to the slowdown of their own economy. So again, if we look at the global macro, your company is not doing that bad, looking purely on the global operation rate and capacity utilization from our plant. If you can move to the next slide. So that slide is mostly covering India as a country. If you see, India has been in the news now for many months because of its stellar growth. Manufacturing sector has definitely been growing a lot. Public investment has been coming into India more and more. Luxury residential real estate have been one of the key drivers for the country growth. And as you know, India has always been protective of its own industry. But now you can see the country is very much inclined to work with the country around the region. 2022 was the signing of the FTA with the UAE. This is a major milestone, obviously, for India, as you now see a lot of capacity from the petrochemical, major petrochemical players coming from UAE. On the back of that, government of India has put in place a strong tariff policy. But as Chandru said, we don't want to rely solely on the tariff policy from the government, because otherwise it would mean that we're not thinking about our own growth, but we're just thinking about protective measures that have been given by the government. And I don't think in the long term that should be a strategy for us. In terms of the target of natural gas for a country like India, as we have put it into the right-hand side, 50% target of natural gas shares of India by 2030. Currently, it's about 6%, and as Chandru explained, we're working towards that. Apart from that, we're very excited about the growth for the country in the next decade. I think that if good fiscal measures and reform are being worked on for the country, petrochemical will definitely be one of the sectors that will grow with it. If we move to the next slide. This slide very much emphasizes the sustainability angle for our industry on top of what, as a company, we have been doing. And I think the key takeaway is that while a company like Manali must do their best in order to be, first of all, compliant with the new regulations, and on top of being compliant, being ahead of the curve with the new technology to be more green and more sustainable, it cannot happen at the pace that some people say. The reason for that is companies ultimately are moving as fast as possible, but implementation, as all of you know, takes time. It takes time and it takes large capital. So companies like Manali, for example, will do their best to implement new technology into their current processes. So Econic is one, DMC Catalyst also is one, to reduce the amount of PO and the EO that we're going to use in our product. So what we feel is that it's basically a work in progress and always a balance that the public through the government policies and private company like Manali must work together. But we don't really see a swift change and a strong disinvestment from any private companies, from fossil fuel, related chemistry or anything of that sort. We see companies going down the road of being more sustainable, but also looking after the capex and the expenses, which is what we are trying to do at Manari. Next slide, please. So I think that's it for the presentation. Thank you very much for staying with us throughout the presentation. I will hand over to the moderator to take any question that you may have.
Thank you, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, please click on the Q&A tab on the panel and click on the raise hand button. The operator will announce your name when it is your turn to ask a question. Please accept the prompt on your screen and unmute your microphone while proceeding with your question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles.
Maybe we should start by taking the first question. Right. We already have three voice questions and one by text.
The first question is from the line of Tarun Saxena from Aditya Birla Finance Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, Nugo. Am I audible?
Yes. Hi, Tarun. Good to
have you. Hi, Nugo. Good. Yeah, good to have you too, and good listening from you about the outlook of the company. So, Hugo, I first of all, I must say that I'm very impressed by the ESG initiatives that the company is putting in place and the focus on sustainability going forward. And Mr. Chandrasekhar also talked about, the policy that you have of reducing the liquid discharge to zero in the near future, if not immediately. And that is something that we as investors to the company or we as financiers to the company very much want to have with the company, with the investee company that we have. So my question to the panel is twofold. First of all, to reduce the carbon emissions and to have a policy of that sort requires substantial investment into the overall capex outlay, and probably it would involve realigning of the processes to sort of, get that desired result of reducing the emissions and everything. So the first question is that, what is the incremental cost that the company is incurring to achieve that goal, and how much pressure it puts on the margin of the company, and how much does it, put the company at a weaker pedestal in comparison to the other competitors who are not following such stringent norms for ESG initiatives? This is the first question. Second question would be more on the financials, that I see that the top line of the company, once it has shot up during the COVID years, it has been going down considerably, and in a manner it is showing a downward trend from 2021 onwards. So first of all, what is the reason for that? And secondly, what is the outlook that the company has for the near future in terms of growth in revenues and margins? Thank you.
Thank you, Tarun. Chandru, do you want to take the first question?
Yes, Hugo. Yes, on the carbon reduction, we work on case-to-case basis, work out the feasibility, and then get into the mode of approval of CAPEX through the board. We haven't gone in, on multiple activities at one go to work on the Econic Catalyst. Is one of the activity to work on the ZLD reduction through study through NIRI is another activity. So we go in segments, and once the study and feasibility is complete, then we get into the CAPEX side of it. And one by one, we go through the board approval. We are not going everything in. That is to answer your question on the carbon reduction CAPEX. And on the financials, yes. The 2 years of peak, what we have seen during COVID, is with two factors. One, there were no imports allowed. So it was entirely Manali's products, commodity products, which was available in the market. And the demand was so high that it could achieve a better price and margin. We can't expect the COVID situation to continue forever. We are back to pre-COVID levels. So even though you can see a drop in the top line and margins, it's not necessarily a drop. It's reaching the pre-COVID levels. And with all the optimization activities and efforts we do to improve our performance and product portfolio, we should be on a stable platform in the days to come. That's from my side, Hugo.
I'll just add two things, Tarun. On the CO2 reduction, there are two things, as you rightly mentioned. There are large-scale projects, and there are enhancement of current technology, because ultimately Manali is not a technology provider, we are a manufacturer. So Manali always, we love to work with technology provider to manufacture polyols. The reality is today, when you look at the new plants that have been put in China, that have been put, for example, by Dow in the US, only a handful of those plants have a full green aspect into their technology. If you look at, for example, Econic, it's a public information, they have entered into an agreement with Changhua in China, which is a very large manufacturer of polyol, in order to manufacture polyol using Econic catalyst. They are much larger than us in terms of the volume that they manufacture. But in terms of how far they're going with the green angle, they are at the same level as us. They work with Econic on a special agreement for China. We work with Econic on a special agreement for India. Now, if you look, for example, of Dow, which put it recently a PO and PG and polyol manufacturing plant in Texas, I think that was in January 2024, they managed to get what's called the ISCC Plus certification. And that is specifically for circular and biocircular solutions, which means that they're decoupling fossil feedstock by using waste source feedstock. So that's always something we can implement, for example, when we look at the new plant in the West, right? So that's the first part when you're talking about technology and things that can be done. In terms of pure engineering and technology that you can buy from provider, if you look at a brand new plant for polyols with brand new technology, which doesn't really give you a green factor to it, but maybe a better quality of PO and polyol, you're talking about multi-hundreds millions of dollars in order to build those kind of plants. For us in the West, we're going with the current technology that we have, using the green credential that we know through Econic, through the DMC catalyst that is, for example, used by our competitors in the West. So there are two things to look at. One is, at large scale, what can we do? The reality is today, even the large players like Dow and Changhua are not doing much more than us when it's come to put a green plant. They're just getting certification, or they're just recycling feedstock. On the technology itself, we will use our current technology, because we feel that with the R&D work that we're able to do, we're able to bring down those numbers that make everyone a bit worried with regards to the sustainability angle. And then with regards to the revenue, I think I agree with Chandru. COVID was definitely a special year that we very much enjoyed. The next 2 years have been obviously difficult. The company also went through management changes, which obviously was very important for your company. Now we are recruiting more people, and the reality is that we've never had so many projects internally to be looking for. I mean, we are going into a very large expansion for propylene glycol with 45% market share in India. We want to grow that because it doesn't require ethinoxide, for example. Going into the West will be the first of its kind for a company like Manali that has been operating in the South. So there are a lot of projects. Penwhite is doing very well. we're going to have a manufacturing site in India. So even though we don't have fixed revenue expectation and forecast, we are definitely working towards increasing revenue through organic growth instead of just looking at it on a flat basis and saying that we should just be back at where it was before COVID. I think now the key is to just go beyond what it was before COVID. I hope this was helpful.
Tarun, does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. The next question is from the line of Aditya Khetan from Smith's Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is, sir, when we look at the numbers, so consolidated numbers from 2016 to around 2024, sir, we are more or less standing at a similar EBITDA. But when we look at the top line, we had almost doubled. So I just want to know, so onto the raw material side, which are our major raw material, and are we able to pass on the incremental price or the RM price to the end customers? If yes, then what is the reason why there is such a increase in the raw material cost and that has not flown through the EBITDA? So this is the first question. And second, sir, so with these new projects which you had mentioned, which will be coming on stream into the propylene glycol and all, where you see, so 2 to 3 years down the line, we could be standing in terms of revenue and EBITDA?
Thank you. I will let Chandru take this question.
Sure. Thank you, Aditya. Thank you, Hero. Right. Our major raw material is propylene, which is, you know, 70% of our consumption. That depends on the price of butane and propane and the international market price of crude. So obviously, you know, it fluctuates on a monthly basis, and it's fixed by the government entities which supplies our raw materials. To answer your specific question, we can't be passing on the raw material increase directly onto the consumers, because the end price of commodities, they are heavily dependent on the import prices. And as we briefed a number of times in our presentation, we are influenced heavily by dumping of imports, mainly from China and other Far East countries. And the import price, whatever is available, we have to somehow match or live with that. Otherwise, we won't have these volumes and products moving in the market. So, to directly answer your question, we can't be in a position to pass on the increase of raw materials directly to customer. On to the second question. Yes, we can in general say we are trying to improve both on top line and EBITDA levels. But it would be an UPSI information to discuss about 2-3 years of revenue and EBITDA in this forum. But obviously, yes, all efforts are being done to stabilize, improve the top line as well as EBITDA margins. Thank you.
Sir, just a follow on to this. Sir, onto the raw material side. So as and when the crude prices fall, so your raw material also fall. So, like, is there any sort of pricing power like we can keep so we can improve our margins? So currently we are witnessing that the crude prices are declining. So into this situation, so this is a positive for the company or a negative?
Certainly, crude prices falling will be good for the company. But obviously, the end prices of our input raw materials are fixed by the state-owned companies, and we don't have a say over it. We can't demand the crude prices have dropped, so reduce our prices. We are not in that situation. We have to heavily depend on the state-run utilities to fix the month-on-month prices and supply to us. But obviously, a lower crude price will drive down the input prices of our raw materials, and that should be good for the company and the shareholders.
And sir, onto the import duty. So, is there any chance also where the government is increasing the import duty or imposing an anti-dumping duty for this product?
But to answer that specifically, we already have certain ruling, ADD ruling in our favor. We have two such ruling in favor of flexible slab stock polyol from Singapore till June 25. We have two rulings from Saudi on flexible slab stock polyol from April 21 on till April 26. But the government can go on specific applications on products with specific countries. It can't have an all-encompassing law for import duties on these dumpings which are happening. So presently we have a case which has been, a finding has been published by DGTR in favor of imposing ADD on China and Thailand imports on flexible slab stock polyol, which is yet to be confirmed by ministries up in the hierarchy. So obviously we have to wait for such favorable decisions. But as we briefed in the presentation, myself and Hugo, we won't really wait for the ADD ruling to come in, in the near future or later. We would work on optimizing our own resources and improving the margins. But any help from government on ADD ruling is certainly welcome, and that will improve our performance definitely.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashraf Patel from Molecule Ventures. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So my question is that the DGTR recommended ADD on flexible slab stock polyols based on the final findings published on 28th of March 24. So ideally, Ministry of Finance imposes or reject an application within 3 months. But in our case, it has been over 6 months. But we have not heard any update on the same. So do you think it would actually be imposed going ahead, or there could be a situation wherein ADD is not imposed? Because incremental pain point over last 2 years in terms of imports were largely from China and Thailand. And this ADD was precisely catering to that pain point of imports.
Thank you, Ashav. To answer your question on this particular finding of DGTR, yes, they have to give a ruling in 3 months' time, but obviously they have extended it by certain clarifications and queries which they are still picking up from the market as well as from specific consumers. They have not so far taken a decision on accepting the findings or rejecting the findings. But the fact that it is still live itself shows that government is considering something. So we keep a positive outlook on that. We do expect government to support Make in India initiative. We are the largest integrated polyol manufacturer, and government is expected to support us under the Make in India scheme. And we do hope, sincerely hope, government takes a very pragmatic view of this DGTR finding on 28th March 24.
Got it, sir. And just a follow-up question on the same, that as mentioned in the PPT, the FY24 breakdown in revenues, slab stock polyols accounted for close to 20%, base and system polyols accounted close to 5% each. And pre-polymers accounted for 10%. So I just wanted to verify the ongoing ADD which we are discussing about. If and all it applies, then what proportion of our sales mix does it impact positively?
Sir, we have a capacity of 45,000 tons for polyols in our facility in Chennai. And if the government is supportive of this ADD, predominantly I would say 60% of the imports which come from China and Thailand, and the balance 40% from Singapore, that will certainly improve our share of the product portfolio. From 19, it could go even up to 30-35%.
Okay, but it would impact only the slab stock polyols.
That's right. It's a product specific. It's not global this thing. It's a country specific and a product specific.
Got it, sir. Another question in the standalone. Even the PG segment is a very large product for us, and as per the standalone profit and loss account in FY24, the company is operating at break-even margins. Does that mean that the PG segment is also facing dumping currently, which was historically a better segment than polyols in terms of margins and better capacity utilization?
Yes, perfect. You are right. On the PG segment, on the industrial grade and fragrance grade, there is a dumping happening now. So the market is facing pressure on the NRVs because of the dumping on these two segments of PG. Otherwise, the margins could have been better.
Okay. And do you see any sign of improvements in the PG market?
It will improve. That is why we have ventured into this capacity expansion. The advantage is we give a 5-year guarantee on our product. That's the USP what we have. And then when there are quality issues pointed out by agencies, drug control authorities, Manali is the first person to be there, attend to the query and sort it out. So we give a complete backup to the consumers and the industry which uses our product. So on the PG segment, the USP continues. We continue to give a 5-year guarantee and we stand specifically on a high platform on that.
Yeah, just to summarize, FY23 and 24 standalone level spreads were lowest in the last entire decade now. So can we say the FY25 profitability would be an inflection point for the company and we can see a revival this financial year itself towards the mean profitability level?
Certainly you have seen the Q1 numbers of FY24-25. So certainly, we are on a stable wicket. And if government is going to support in the short run on ruling on the ADD from China and Thailand dumping, and a couple of other factors on PG and the capacity increase what we are working out, certainly, we are in for good times.
A follow-up question on the capacity increase, as you rightly mentioned. So in PG phase 1, we are doing capacity capex of around 100 crores. So when do we expect it to actually start contributing in terms of volumes in the numbers?
We should be completing the project in Q2 of 25. So immediately from there on, we should be focusing more on marketing the additional capacities what we have.
And that would account for close to 32,000 metric ton of PG. Is that right?
Yeah, additional capacity. But we won't expect the whole thing to move in right from day one. So it will be in stages. Yeah, it will be in stages.
Got it. And same question, sir, for polyester polyols. When is it expected to come? The 8,000 metric ton.
Sir, the first phase is already completed and we are using it for our captive consumption. The second phase should be up and running by end of Q3 or beginning of Q4. That should be available for market to consume it.
Got it, sir. And sir, how is current realization of PG and polyol segment? How has it moved over the last few months? And what are the expected volumes for both this segment for FY25? I understand pricing we can't estimate.
I'm afraid we can't go in depth into that being a UPSI information. But certainly, based on Q1 trend, you can expect good things to turn around.
Okay, and what would be the current capacity utilization for Notdom and Penwhite subsidiaries?
I would leave it to the CEOs to respond to that. Just a minute.
Sure.
Yeah, at Notdom level, our capacity is around roughly in excess of 50 to 60%. So there's still plenty of room to grow without making significant investments. But we cautiously operate in the premium end of the product line. So we are not so focused on increasing the capacity utilization or filling the plant with commodity products. Our aim is to be on the specialty end of products so that long-term sustainability of the profits as well as stickiness of the customers exist. Hope that helps. Over to Helios. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Gurumurthy. And from a Penwhite perspective, I can only mimic what, in fact, Gurumurthy says. I mean, also Penwhite is very much focused on the premium end of the segment. So we have no intrinsic desire or need to max out a plant. We don't necessarily have a very high minimum utilization rate that we need to pay off a capital investment, for instance. Typically, we run at the moment after a number of debottlenecking activities under new ownership at about 50% utilization, which we foresee is enough for the next few years. So we have an ambitious growth plan, but we foresee no major need for CapEx in the next 3 to 5 years. We can do quite a lot with the free asset capacity we have. Any further expansion that we would need to support will be primarily by putting more feet on the ground. It's about staff rather than capital investment.
Okay. And sir, it was mentioned in the PPT regarding the 30,000 metric ton expansion on the standalone in Western India. So can you please throw some more light on the same? What sort of product profiling are you targeting? What is the expected timeline to commence the CAPEX? And when does it actually start, the plant starts? What would be the EBITDA expectation for the same?
As of now, I can only give information on the CAPEX, what we have budgeted, and the IR payback period, what we have worked out. We are in the very initial stage of this expansion project. In the days to come, maybe after a quarter, we will come to know more on the development of this expansion work. This is on a very preliminary scale, and we try to cover 30,000 tons of systems polyols catering from the Western India expansion.
Sure, sir. Thank you to the entire team for answering out all the questions. And I, this was very insightful conversation. I would, as a feedback, I would like to communicate that if we can do this quarterly phone call frequently, that would be very helpful to stay updated with the company. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashok. Thank you, Ashok.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nirav Jimudia from Anvil Wealth Management Limited. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, most of the questions have been answered on. Sir, just want to understand from you, like you mentioned to the earlier participants, that we were having the lower capacity utilizations on the polyol side just because the prices were not remunerative. So, just wanted to understand from you, like when we see our production process, like when we start from all the way from polypropylene to conversion to propylene oxide, and further to one of the product is, let's say, propylene glycol, and another is polyols. Because of the unavailability of, let's say, propylene in the domestic market, or the higher prices of propylene, we were slightly constrained in terms of our production. And on the other hand, also the factors what you mentioned about the prices were also correct. So if you can just explain in terms of whether the availability of propylene in the domestic market could help us improve the utilization rates, or let's say long-term contracts on the propylene side at a slightly better pricing could help us to get those margins between propylene and propylene oxide to improve the profitability as well as the utilization levels. This was my question.
Thanks, Nero. Shall I go ahead, Hugo?
Yeah, sir.
Sure. Rightly put up by you. If there is an impact on the input prices on propylene, certainly the outturn cost for our propylene oxide, PG and PY will definitely be a good factor for us. So, yes, if there is a propylene availability capacity increase in India overall, that will help us stabilize the price, and there could be more supplies and availability available for our input raw material. That will obviously ease out the stress on increased cost on the input raw material side of it. And that will certainly have the further conversion costs of PG and PY betterment for us to improve the margins on that. But the end product is obviously determined by the dumping which is happening as of now, the mindless dumping which is happening. So we don't have a control as of now on the end result and the margins. So we have to have a wait and watch situation, how we obviously are reacting to the dumping side of it, how government is going to help us further the Make in India process. And obviously, as you rightly mentioned, the import, the input price of propylene, if that eases out with more capacities, that will improve both the capacity utilization as well as the margin side of it.
So, sir, if you can help us explain, like, as compared to the players who will be producing propylene oxide globally through the propylene route, how much, because most of them would be integrated, I suppose, and we not being a producer of propylene and has to rely on the domestic market for the requirement of propylene, how extra we must be paying on in terms of the propylene cost, and because of which those margins are getting compromised at this point of time, A. And B, is there any other alternative to produce propylene oxide or any other route available in the world? Probably world may be moving towards some better production process through which the utilization of propylene to that extent comes down, and we could also adopt those routes and improve on the availability of propylene oxide. Because I guess if propylene is not available, even the propylene oxide imports to India would be at that price, which would curtail us from further converting into, let's say, polyols or propylene glycol. So your thoughts on same?
Sir, that's the reason why we have started this association with Econic. You know, that should, to a good percentage of our input materials, we will reduce the dependency of propylene-based raw material for our PG and PY. So, the more we work closely and are successful in implementing the Econic CO2-based polyols, we will be reducing our dependency on the PO. So, to cut short, you know, the overall analysis of what alternate available, I have given this brief on Econic.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much, and wish the entire team of Manali all the best.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. We'll move on to the text questions. The first question is from Keshav Garg from Countercyclical PMS. And the question is, what is the outlook for FY25 in terms of top line and bottom line? What is the steady state operating margin can we expect going forward? What is our current capacity and utilization levels? What is the peak revenue potential at optimum utilization? What is the scope PF margin improvement over the next 2-3 years?
I think we have answered this in the previous questions with the voice queries which were raised. It will be not feasible to give the UPSI information as far as the future trends and expectations on the margins over 2-3 years. However, on capacities, the utilization and the raw material input costs, we have given a brief. So, I think we have answered the query.
We'll move on to the next question. The next question is from Dhruv Patel. The question is, what are the updates about the anti-dumping duties?
Yeah, I think I've given a brief on country-wise ADD presently available and the present position of the latest DGTR finding as well. So I think we have answered that query.
All right. The next question is from Tisha Shah, and the question is, hi, I have two questions. Please help me with some clarity. First, with Penwhite starting its India operations, what revenue will it contribute to the overall top line in the next 2-3 years? Second, you mentioned about the new project in Western India. Can you elaborate on the same?
I would like to buy a answer to this question.
Yes, thanks very much for that question. And this, of course, the $64,000 question, isn't it? What is revenue will it be contributed? I mean, the reality is, of course, that we have high expectations of the Indian market. And we're still trying to assess what the total market size is that is addressable for us. We know that the total market size for foam control chemistry in the Indian market is around 35,000 tons or thereabout. We are looking to see what is the addressable volume. Clearly, we are not in the commodity segment there. We really are focused on our premium segment, which we reckon is about half of that. We also know that typically about half of that half is imported. These are companies in India that are importing, reputable foam control chemistries from international players, manufactured to the highest standards. In particular, that part of the segment we think is addressable to us. Of course, this is an important input point for the current assessment work we are doing to work out if a manufacturing location for us in India itself would make sense. We have for many years already had an export business in India, which is at the moment relatively modestly sized. Our longer term ambition clearly would be to have about potentially up to 10% of the total market demand for foam control chemistry. But in order for us to achieve that, really a local manufacturer would be a necessary precondition, which is about as detailed as I want to be at this stage.
And we have answered the question on project in Western India in detail before.
All right. We'll move on to the next question. The next question is from Vineet Jain from Siddh Capital. And the question is, who are the competition to Penwhite in the domestic market in India?
Well, I mean, in reality, of course, there are a number of global players in very active in surfactant chemistry, in the Dow Chemicals of this world, Henkel, Wacker, some of which have a presence in India already. They don't necessarily compete in the same space that we are operating in. In the more specialist segments for foam control in particular, there are a number of international players with a regional focus. Typically, some of the European competitors that are our competitors here in Europe, we do see in India as well. And there are quite a number of local players in India, really local Indian players who are active, but they tend to focus really on the entry level of the market, not the the higher level, not the premium segment, so to speak. So we don't see them as a competitor. You know, some of our typical competitors in Europe are, the likes, and again, we don't see the likes of Dow or Henkel or Wacker as competitors because they focus, just because of their size, on a different type and a different segment of the market. Typically, we are looking at competitors like Schill and Seilacher, Blackburn Chemicals, Momentive, Busetti, similar players in the segment in Europe.
Thank you.
I have nothing to add here.
We have a voice question from Pujan Shah, who is an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, sir, you're audible, but there is a lot of echo coming when you're talking.
Am I clear now?
Yes, sir, much better. Please go ahead.
Okay, hi Manali team. Just wanted to ask one question. Are the PG and polyol prices are related, and the spreads of the PG expected to get better with expected ADD on polyols, or the prices are unrelated to that? That's my question.
Thank you, sir. The prices are not necessarily related. PG has its own caustic structure and the polyols, and today polyols are getting affected by so much of dumping happening. PG only to a certain extent, and the prices are not directly related.
Okay, sir. That's from my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Hugo Schadow, Head of Strategy, AMIH, for closing comments.
Sure. So thank you everyone for joining us today. It was really great to spend this time with you going through our strategy. I hope this was helpful. We will make sure that we continue doing this exercise going forward. I would like to extend my sincere thank you to all of you and all the participants to making time. It was, I feel, a very productive session, and we truly value our interaction with you. So I hope to see you soon. And if you have any queries and suggestions, they are always welcome. And we definitely encourage you to reach out to our team for any further question that you may have. Thank you, everyone. And I hope and we hope to see you soon and discuss further.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Manali Petrochemicals Limited, that concludes today's session. Thank you for your participation. You may now click on the exit meeting to disconnect.